Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. Have your say now. Text or WhatsApp Kildare Today on 0833 97 97 97.
I can email us studio at kfmradio.com or call us 0458 98 999. And that's what someone from the men's shed in Baltinglass did yesterday, and Clem forgot it and missed it, and apologies about that, particularly to PJ Hanlon. From all the lads in the men's shed in Baltinglass, PJ Hanlon was 95 yesterday. Cracking. Happy birthday to you, PJ Hanlon. And hope you had a wonderful day. And hello to all the lads in the men's sheds in Baltinglass, and indeed men's sheds everywhere. And now that women's sheds are being set up as well, hopefully we'll have a few here in Kildare soon. Over to Owen.
Yeah, and Fine Gael TD for Kildare North. Bernard Durkin raised the issue of teacher retention at Kilshan Row National School and also Maynooth Post Primary Schools in the Dáil in the last couple of days. And Bernard Durkin is on the line now. Morning, Bernard.
Good morning.
Tell us a little bit about these two schools then, or these couple of schools that you raised. We'll start off with Kilshan Row National School. What's the issue here?
Because of the fact that the previous year's school enrolment was the criteria for retention at the time, and the enrolment, they were one short of the required number of pupils to retain their full complement of teachers in the previous year, and ironically are five or six ahead of it in the current year. So the previous year's evaluation was visiting the current year in a negative way, but the minister very kindly examined the thing, had a look at it, and has given an undertaking that they will be covered for the current year, as subject to confirmation of the numbers in September.
Indeed. Let's hear what Minister Norma Foley had to say.
The staffing process includes an appeals mechanism for schools to submit a staffing appeal under certain published criteria. The primary school referred to by the deputy has had its appeal considered by the Primary Staffing Appeals Board and has been now informed that it will retain its current staffing for the 2022-23 school year, pending, this is important, confirmation that the school meets the required enrolment threshold in September.
All right, so a bit of good news there. Just the point that Norma Foley stressed there, that pending that particular confirmation, do we now have that confirmation? Is that teacher going to be retained?
I think so. I think all the evidence is there to suggest that if the teacher will be retained, but the proviso goes in at all times, pending confirmation in September. In other words, to ensure that the numbers didn't disappear. They're not likely to disappear. It's a good rural school, strongly supported by the rural community in which it's situated. A school that's progressive, likes to move on, and more importantly, what the provisions made by the school, given the pupil raw enrolment last year and this year, I think they've done their work very well, and it was possible for the minister at this particular time, and the appeal system available to our department, it was possible to make the necessary provisions in order to cater for the numbers now emerging.
Okay, that's Kilshan Row National School. What about the Maynooth Post Primary Schools then, Bernard? Obviously, this is a much bigger school.
Yeah, that's a much bigger school. It's two post-primary schools on the same campus, about catering eventually 1,200 each, so that it's 2,000 plus children, or students. And during the negotiation leading up to the siting of the two schools on that particular location, provision was made by the minister, promise given by the minister, to the effect that a 1.5 extra teacher number would apply because of the necessary changes taking place, the transitionary period, and the fact that two schools were coming together in the same campus in a virtually unique situation. Again, which was well supported by the local community and well provided for in advance, well identified, possible snags were well identified in advance. The school is up and running, is running very well. It is hugely supported by the local community. Both schools are hugely supported by the local community. And they share facilities. such as recreation facilities. So they're doing things that ordinarily wouldn't be possible to do in two separate sites at a distance from each other. So I think it is a very comprehensive educational facility by two that is running very well. And it was indicated recently that perhaps the promise made might not be fulfillable. And the purpose of the exercise in the course of the adjournment debate was to try to ensure that the school authorities and the KWETB have an opportunity of reviewing the situation again in the particular circumstances that apply to those schools. And
are we we're still talking about teacher retention here, though, Bernard? How many how many teachers are needed? How many extra teachers?
Well, it's 1.5 extra. Not very much, though. One or two teachers extra makes a huge difference.
Okay, here's what Norma Foley said in relation to the Maynooth post-primary schools.
Specifically in relation to the campus and the post-primary schools, again, I would have to reiterate, you know, very clearly, Deputy, that the department provides the staffing allocation to each ETB on the basis of the overall enrolment of students within the schools in the charge of the ETB. The distribution of that staffing allocation then the responsibility for that falls upon the shoulders of the chief executive or the CEO of the ETB based on the overall enrolments of the schools within the ETB again. And again, I will reiterate, where there may be a specific shortfall, where a school management authority is unable to meet its curricular commitments for the students within its approved allocation, the department does consider applications for additional short-term support. This concession is available to support and enable, if you like, essential curricular provision to continue. And the allocation process, as I said, does, and I said this earlier, include appellate mechanisms under which schools and ETBs can appeal against the allocation due to them under the staffing schedules. The ETB is free to submit an appeal under the particular criteria to the Independent Appeal Board if it is their view that they are not in a position in a particular school to meet the curricular demands as provided for.
It seems a bit more complicated than the Kilshan Row issue, Bernard, but it's all dependent really on whether the schools want to appeal to the ETB, etc. Are they going to do that? Have they already done it?
I think they will. I think that the Minister herself came into the House to answer the questions the other night and very courteously dealt with two schools on the one question, which was a throwback from previous week.
Yeah.
But she understands the situation there, and as previously a teacher herself, she understands what the situation was and the transitionary period that what the school authorities in both cases foresaw as being possible difficulties. And okay. Those provisions, they still stand, and it is open to the schools and the ETB to review the situation from the point of view of ensuring that the provision that was offered to the school previously when the transition was taking place, that that will continue for as long as is necessary.
Okay, raising the issue of teacher retention at Kilshan Row National School and the Maynooth post-primary schools in the Dáil on Tuesday evening or Monday evening, I think it was. That's Bernard Durkin, Fine Gael TD for Kildare North. Thanks, Bernard.
Thank you, Bernard. Thank you, Owen, for that. Now we can turn our attention and stay on the educational team, because this time the headline story is that minimum qualifications for special needs assistance are to be reviewed this year. To tell me more about that is Assistant General Secretary of the Fórsa Trade Union, which represents the vast majority of special needs assistants. The government will review the minimum qualification for special needs assistance in schools this year and aim to introduce what they called accreditation for a national training programme. Shane, good morning to you.
Good morning, Clem. How are you?
Thank you for joining us. Now, people might be amazed that the actual minimum qualification for SNAs at the moment stands at?
Three passes in the junior cert, or what was the old inter-cert.
Right, let's repeat that. Three passes in the inter-cert or old junior cert. Now, that is still the minimum qualification for a job that has changed significantly over those decades.
Absolutely, absolutely. The care needs have evolved. The, you know, understanding of additional needs and additional education have evolved significantly, and thankfully so. But unfortunately, the qualification has been stuck in time. It was set in 1979 and remained stuck in stone since.
Now, an Oireachtas committee heard that despite the significant change in the role of the SNA, as you've just said, it stays at that, which is insulting, the committee heard, to skilled staff. 98% of SNAs have actually progressed beyond minimum qualifications over the years.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the current recruitment trends show that employers are recruiting at those levels consistently. And as I said to the Oireachtas committee myself the other day, you can't fault an employer for that. If, you know, any employer in the country wants the best staff, the best qualified staff. It's just shocking. And the issue is that there is such a stark disparity between what the minimum is and what the employers are seeking and actually what the SNAs hold. So that, look, it needs to be addressed. We know the progress society has made since 1979 and the changes that have happened. We could go on a trip down memory lane, or there'd be some very stark kind of realisations of what was in existence then. Things move on, and unfortunately this has just not, and it's kind of beggared belief that it's been such a struggle to get it to this point.
Now, there is, and no disrespect at all to SNAs, but originally when the job came about, SNAs tended to be not used in the most professional way in assisting the teacher within the child welfare context. SNAs often found themselves directing traffic or making tea or whatever else, and unfortunately there might be still an element of that here and there.
Yes, there is. We would deal with that, unfortunately, on a quite a regular basis, in particular around any kind of additional hours that may be required. So there's banks of hours that can be used if there's viable work. And the way I describe these hours is that if there's something that's SEN-related, special education-related, and can't be done during normal school hours, the SNAs can be asked to stay back under a thing called the 72 hours. Unfortunately, what we see is that when those hours are used, it's almost like there's a compulsion on employers to go and find duties, and many can find some of the most demeaning tasks. We've had directing traffic, washing cars, you know, hoovering and mopping large sections of the school, which there's separate budgets for, there's separate roles that carry out those duties. We've had manual kind of work, you know, short of building work, knocking walls, moving furniture. There's been a multitude of things.
But that's absolutely disgraceful, Shane, because they're very implicit in the name itself, Special Needs Assistant, indicates, and the government has spent €2.5 million funding a course for SNAs at University College Dublin, which began in 2021. It's a 10-month course developed to upskill existing and train new SNAs to more effectively help children with special education needs. And that's what these people should be doing and what they should be involved in by management of the schools, not sent out to be cleaners or washer-uppers.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it really does boil down to the fundamental issue, which there's a lack of respect, and that lack of respect, in my view, is based on the fact that there isn't a minimum qualification, they're not professionally recognised, that the training that is now being put on by the Department of Education, the purveyors of education in the country, is not accredited. So, you know, if you were of a mind, and, you know, we'd hope there isn't people of a mind, but if you were of a mind that you might think, I'm going to use this additional resource as kind of a general unskilled worker, a bit of a dog's body for want of a better term, then that plays into that thought, because they've no minimum qualification. They go on a course that the department puts on for them. It's quite an extensive and comprehensive course. The committee heard plenty about it the other day. And yet it's not accredited, despite it being run by the Department of Education and one of the most prestigious universities in the country, in UCD.
And the fact is that that 10-month course, the SNAs don't get that course. It's freely, totally freely available for them, although I'm sure there's costs of travel and other associated costs as well, like everything else in the sector. But, I mean, we have 19,000 special needs assistants working in our schools across the country, with numbers increasing. The original, by the way, back in near 2000 was just 300. 19,000 of these people are working in our schools. Yes, not all of them have the this new qualification, but 3,500 of them are expected to graduate from the programme over a four-year period. Ultimately, it's the end user that pays the cost here in human terms, the children with special needs who are not maybe being allocated the type of expertise, added expertise, that should be available to them?
Absolutely, and you could ask, I'd say, any parent around the country who has a child with additional education needs, and they will, in general, expect that the SNA is of a certain standard, a certain qualification, whether that's, you know, formally recognised or not, because SNAs have never been behind the doors about going and upskilling themselves. We see regularly, we've members who have level 8s, some beyond, some masters, bachelors. It's a profession that they get into because they love, they care about it, they see the reward that is in it. And it is a very rewarding profession, but I have to say, it's not something I could do myself because the challenges that come with it are hugely significant.
Well, if I might just throw into the mix here, if you are supporting a child on the autism spectrum, and, you know, the autism spectrum ranges far, far, far across different, but it can range to very physically, emotionally, psychologically challenging behaviour by the children, or supporting children with disability and whatever else, that requires an empathy on a human level, but it also requires the professional expertise. And there's very few teachers in the country that have the capacity or the time to deal, you know, on a one-to-one basis with a class full of children. So the importance of these special needs assistants can't be overstated. Now, Josepha Madigan, who's the Minister for State, she says, yes, we'll review it this year, and we'll aim to introduce accreditation for a national training programme, but the contract review must be carried out. In your view, you sat in on the committee, you heard the minister, you heard others address the conference as your own union did. Is this kicking the can down the road again?
Yeah, look, the comments were extremely welcome. I mean, to move a position, first and foremost, is obviously for a union, it's a very welcome step forward. But the question then becomes when, and there is an urgency in relation to this. We don't necessarily see the need to link it to the contract review. We actually think that's a little bit of putting the cart before the horse, and there was a debate that centred on that the other day in the Oireachtas Committee. When you're designing a contract of employment, you generally start off with what kind of level of responsibility is it at? You know, what level are we talking about that this contract needs to be at, and what are the duties then that fall from that? If you've not got clarity around the minimum education qualification and kind of the level that, you know, the grades that you're reviewing or the contract you're putting in place is at, well, then it makes it extremely difficult because you're going backwards.
Yeah.
You're saying, well, this is all they do. This is everything they do. And now we'll give a qualification on that basis or give a minimum education qualification on that basis.
Well, let's see what happens on that basis anyway, and how timely the minister will be in introducing reviews or the minimum qualification that is necessary for such a specialised job. 19,000 teachers plus special needs assistants in the system who are there ready to help tens of thousands of children with whether they're psychological or indeed physical challenges, and that needs to be formalised. Nobody, I think, will disagree with that. Shane Lambert is Assistant General Secretary of the Forces Trade Union. Thank you for joining us on Kildare Today this morning, Shane.
Thanks for your time, Clem, and thanks as always.
You're more than welcome. After the break, we're going to be hearing why Irish parents pay €1,000 a month for childcare, possibly more in some cases, compared to just €150 in Sweden. Wouldn't it make you weep that we're not living in Sweden, maybe?
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. Have your say now. Text or WhatsApp Kildare Today on 0833 97 97 97.
KFM. Childcare in Ireland is the focus of an Irish Country Living four-week investigative series. I'm joined now by Ciara Leahy. She is food and consumer editor with that magazine. Hi, Ciara.
Morning, Ciara. How are you?
I'm good. All the Ciaras, too many. Clem alluded to it or pointed it out directly just before the ad break, why Irish parents are paying €1,000 a month for childcare compared to €150 in Sweden. I'm just going to localise it a little bit, Ciara, before we begin, because on the 7th of June, a survey by InvestWise, they're an independent financial advisors in Dublin and Cork, they found that parents in Kildare are paying €844 per month for childcare. And in 2018, the figure was 850, and in 2013, it was €814. We know some places in Wicklow, Dublin, are paying around €1,200 a month.
Extremely expensive, yes. And yeah, when I was doing the research for this, Ciara, you know, I was speaking to people in the industry that were saying, you know, when it comes to OECD levels, Ireland is rated as Ireland is ranked bottom of the class. We said, who is top of the class? And they said Sweden and those countries and those Nordic countries. So basically what I did is I tracked down a couple that are living in Sweden, Jerry and Susanna McCarthy. Jerry's actually from Dublin, and you know, because I wanted to, I heard that, like, you know, levels are like €150 per child in Sweden, so I wanted to talk to them about what the reality is over there. And it's not just €150 per child. As you have more children in childcare, it gets cheaper. So it's €100 for the second child, it's €50 for the third child. So if you're to look at it, that's €300 for three children in childcare. I mean, I know that Irish creches sometimes give a 10% discount or whatever, you know, for a second or third child. But, you know, you're still going to be, if you're looking at that €800 in Kildare and you're multiplying that by three, you're talking about over €3,000, you know. So it's versus €300, it could be 10 times the amount. It's a massive difference. But Ciara, you know what was very interesting when I was talking to Jerry and Susanna is, and I guess what I wanted to do out of this series was, you know, there were a lot of reports there about the price of childcare, and it's absolutely, you know, sky high. And, you know, but I guess that is only one element of the story. You know, I went back to work a year and a half ago after having my first baby, and the stress I went through to try and get somebody, you know, to mind my child. I had my name down on a creche when I was 5 months pregnant, and I still never got a place in the creche. So what was very interesting when I was talking to Jerry and Susanna is, you know, they didn't have that
stress.
They didn't have that fear of what's going to happen to my child after I go back to work.
And I mean, as well, as a parent, I'm sure, I'm not one, but as a parent, I'm sure that you're wanting to make sure that wherever this place is that you put your child into care is suitable, suits your child, you're happy with it, you find the people are agreeable with the way you'd like to handle their child, etc., etc. So it is a little bit of a jigsaw puzzle in that sense, you know, finding something that fits for you. But most parents are just finding whatever is potentially available. As you say, 5 months pregnant, putting your name down for a childcare place.
Absolutely. Whatever is available, you know, that is certainly the case. And just again, I didn't, that place that I put my name down for when I was 5 months pregnant, I really, really wanted to get my baby in there. And by the time I got to the end of it, I had a childminder who pulled out on me. And the Wednesday before I went back to work, I had no one to mind my child.
It's so, an extremely stressful situation.
It's extremely stressful, but extremely common. Yeah. My story is not rare. There are, you know, that was the interesting thing here about this survey that we did in the Irish Farmers Journal, because this is the first week of this series. And what we wanted to do in the first week is really see where we are now, not just in terms of how much parents are paying, but what's the reality for parents. And it was a common section, what their, you know, their daily situation that was really coming back very interesting.
So Ciara, I just want to note this to our listeners. On Tuesday, I was speaking to Elaine Dunn. She's the chair of the Federation of Early Childcare Providers. And she and other childcare professionals were calling for clarity from the government because the Taoiseach did note they plan to cut costs and increase funding in the industry. She was noting if that happens for her, these and many other childcare professionals and providers, they're actually going to have to close their doors. There's a reason why their prices are so high. It's so expensive, insurance, etc. If you look at the comparison with Sweden or other Nordic countries, are they at the levels we are in terms of insurance and all the added bills that come along with that?
No, because it's publicly funded over there. It's a publicly funded model, whereas here it's very much a privately funded model. Now, I know, and I spoke to Elaine as well, and she's going to be featured in next week's Country Living, giving her point of view about this core funding that's been introduced. But it's a totally different model. And
just to let people know, that core funding, I believe, is it right to say €115 million?
No, so the core funding is going to be €221 million per year. Basically, what the minister announced back in December was that, I have it right here, was that they're basically going to double expenditure based on 2018 figures. So that means that our funding for the expenditure on childcare will go from €485 million to 970 million by 2028. So in next week's paper, which I'm working on today, I have an interview with the minister, asking him, right, what are we putting that money towards? But I also have Elaine talking, going, right, when you actually look at that 221 million a year, it's a very, very big number. But when you break it down to each childcare provider, it actually is minuscule for them, and it's not enough. And she has said, you know, that there will be providers that will go out of business because of it, and they were protesting at the Dáil yesterday about it. But again, going back to your question, because it's a publicly funded model in Sweden, there's a lot more uniformity and consistency, and it's a well-established model that's been in place for quite a while now. And just to give you a bit of history about why they are where they are, Ciara, versus why we are, it actually kind of goes back to the 80s and 90s, where they and other Nordic countries concentrated on gender equality in the workplace. And then, I guess, the whole childcare system came as a secondary benefit from that, because they were saying, right, if we want women in the workplace, then we have to provide good childcare.
Absolutely.
And then, so it's been established over a long time. Here in Ireland, it's been a kind of our mindset that, right, you will send your child to school at 4 or 5. But until then, it's kind of a private issue how your child is raised, you know.
Okay.
And mostly it has been the woman's job.
Yeah, that's definitely what the stereotype has been out there, and the generalisation. Thank you so much, Ciara, for sharing your story also. Ciara Leahy, Food and Consumer Editor with Irish Country Living. And just before we go, to note that research carried out at the beginning of this month that was released noted some parents are looking for childcare in this county. They're being told that there's no availability until July 2023. Three childcare facilities were contacted that time, Clem, and it was a breakdown of how much the wait time was. So July 2023 for some.
It would make you weep, as I said earlier. And by the way, just to point out that Irish Country Living is a weekly magazine which is inside the Irish Farmers Journal, which is on your shop shelves every Thursday indeed. Very informative, I have to say. Good interview, that. Well done, all. Both Ciaras in that case. Ciara Leahy speaking with Ciara Noble. Thank you for that. Now let's move to the Atai Municipal District, and we're joined by Councillor Vera Louise Behan. Good morning to you, Vera Louise.
Good morning, Clem. Lovely to speak with you.
And you too. Now, you brought three motions to the Atai Municipal District, and I'm just going to have a look at those, which I had up on my screen in the last minute or so. Indeed, I have it now. You wanted a footpath between the three county service station, and that's halfway between Atai and Carlow, and the old post office in Megheny. Why? Yes. Because with all due respect now to the place, and I love it, and it's a very good and excellent King Oil service station out there, which always has KFM on. So hello to everyone at King Oil service station in Megheny. But back to the footpath between that service station and the old post office.
Yes, they do. And, you know, I mean, this kind of actually ties in with your Irish Country Living article there now, because this is a nice Irish country spot.
It is, yeah, actually.
Yeah. Look, there's another business there as well, and I mean, I've seen the staff from that shop and the local business too, travelling back and forth to the shop on no footpath. There's just a grass verge there.
And it is a very busy. It is an extremely busy road, because it's the main road from Atai to Carlow, but it's also fed in by the road from Castledermot to the three counties, and it's fed in if you were coming from the Laois side as well, at the crossroads there. The bad news is the council says they have no provision to accept additional works this year.
There's a huge grass verge there. There's a huge area there. And even if they made it functional, it'd be great. And I had asked for this before. And there had been plans for this before a long time ago.
Okay.
I know with the county development plan, there's hopefully going to be a little bit more development in the area, and there will be a need for it. So I think the council need to step in there and do that.
Well, they'll say they'll examine the request when resources allow and engage with the roads design team if a survey is required. You also want them to liaise with local businesses with a view to support the installation of commercial electric car charging ports throughout the Atai Municipal District.
Yes, and it's you know, it's been a positive result. The council have agreed to promote its findings from the Department of Transport recent document published in April. So to promote its findings among rural communities as well. You know, I mean, we see queues at charging ports at petrol stations or car parks where they are. We see queues at the weekend. People are topping up their cars on a Sunday. They could be doing this if they're, say, in a restaurant or a coffee shop or at a playground. The cars are parked parked there anyway, they might as well be parked at charging ports.
All right. Okay, well, the council says it's expected that any funding proposal contained will require, that's in a strategy document, will require matching funded by the council. So they didn't say yes, but they didn't say no either.
They didn't say yes, they didn't say no, but they said the match funding might be a challenge. Sure, what's life if not a bit of a challenge sometimes, you know?
All right, indeed. Time just catches us there. You had a third motion, which you asked the council to report back on its recent representation to Cycling Ireland with regards to Leinster Loop roads, routes in the Italian Municipal District. Now, if I might just summarise that, they said that, yeah, they have been in touch, but that the NCN, which is the National Cycle Network Plan, don't feel that all aspects of the route would fit into their strategy, but they're going to at least have a look at it.
They haven't closed the door on it, and I know it's for fit cyclists and it's for kids and families and all across the board. There are some routes that they haven't closed the door on.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's really, really, I feel, you know, they haven't said no, so we're hopeful all the time.
All right. On those half positives anyway, in terms to those responses, that's Fianna Fáil Councillor Vera Louise Behan on the Atai Municipal District.